Deconstructionist Radio presents The War Room, where we discuss tactics for strategic Christian living.
Mighty Lord, extend your kingdom. Be the truth with triumph crowned. Let the lands that sit in darkness hear the glorious gospel sound.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The War Room. I'm Bill Evans, your host. I'm in Greeley, Colorado, and on the phone, I've got Jeremy Walker. Jeremy is a busy contributor to Reconstructionist Radio, as well as headmaster, and him and his wife are coordinators of 9 different school plants around Florida that are ministries of the congregation. And we wanted to have Jeremy on to introduce himself and the ministry and to tell you all about what they've got going on. It's an interesting, I guess you might say, an interesting approach to, and an interesting, I guess, definition of their congregation, where they really do see their educational efforts through the children as an integral part, if not perhaps the central thrust of their endeavors to reach families with a faith for all of life. So, Jeremy, you can correct me if I've misspoke anything, but welcome to the War Room.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's glad to be here today.
Go ahead and tell us about your, I guess at first we can just talk about your exposure, your introduction to Christian Reconstruction, your affiliation with Nicene Covenant, and how you, as you said, married the boss's daughter, so to speak, and the role that education plays in what this Reconstructionist congregation in Southwest Florida is attempting to accomplish.
Yeah, definitely. Well, my name, of course, is Jeremy Walker, and education itself has been very important to me, even from when the time I was got converted around 17 years old, and I had felt the call to go into Christian education. Had seen growing up Southern Baptist in the Southern Baptist church where I grew up in, and had been growing up there my entire life. Of course, having seen many problems that the institutional churches as a whole, not just the Southern Baptist, but in general, the churches as a whole, a lot of the hypocrisy and problems that they have, including just basic lack of doctrine, very sad doctrinal problems. And so when I got introduced to Christian Reconstruction at the age of about 18, R.J. Rushdoony, I felt a call to Christian education. And so one of the things I wanted to do is be able to start a school. And I felt that call, and I found out there was an organization in Southwest Florida called Grace Community School, which I'm now a part of, and they were involved in not only running Christian schools, but had been doing so at that time since 1986. So for a number of years, for over 20 years from the time that I had heard about them. And had not just been doing so, but doing so successfully. And so I wanted to learn how to run a school, and these people, Grace Community School, had successful locations that were running, had been doing so for years. And so if you want to learn something, you go find somebody who knows what they're doing, knows how to do so, and is doing something successful. And so I found out they had an apprenticeship program, and I enrolled in the program, and the apprenticeship program has, I went through that, and in the process of that, of course, as you mentioned, I did meet my wife, who had grown up in the schools. Her father, Pastor Ellsworth McIntyre, had started the schools back in 1986, also a Christian Reconstructionist, and was heavily influenced by R.J. Rushdoony. And so whenever I became involved with it and got married, my wife and I began running one of the schools and managing them. And, 17 years has now passed. We now have 10 children. 11 is due pretty much any day. Like, as we're talking, my wife can deliver any day now, actually, number 11. And so our family has also grown over the last 17 years of being married. And as you mentioned, we do run a family-run Christian school because my wife and I work together. Our children are also there, and the concept of how do you educate your children is also always on the radar, especially for Christians, and especially if they understand the problem with humanistic education. And so we're also able to have our children with us, so all of our children are with us at our schools, and we're able to actually control their education as well. And on top of all those things, we've been able to work together and control our children's education. Our schools are a ministry, and so we focus on Christian education, teaching young children the law of God and its application, and that's probably the biggest part there is the application of it to their lives, and so that's what we do. And so we not only operate this one location, but Grace Community School has grown over the last 30 years. Now there are 9 locations in Southwest Florida, and we also assist in supervising and various other aspects of the other 8 locations. So we do stay quite busy. And our schools, as far as the children are concerned, we have about 2,000 students a day. So we have quite a large operation, quite a large ministry to the outreach to the families and the others. Now, the apprenticeship program that we have that I went through myself helps young people. It seeks to find people like myself when I was young and attempting to become a Christian teacher or wanting to run a school. And it does, we actively are seeking these people out. We've been doing this for years. And I went from being in the program to actually helping to kind of be the head of the apprenticeship program so that I help supervise and recruit people to bring them in and to learn how to actually be a Christian school teacher and how to own and or operate their own school. And so we will bring people here and train them to do these things. So it's on-the-job training, which we do. We don't do what is traditionally called an internship. Here at our locations, our programs, internships are typically where you go to learn from somebody who's doing, but you don't necessarily get paid to do it. Kind of you just go there and kind of donate your time. We actually are, all of our apprentices get paid a full salary while they're here, and they also get enrolled into college so that they can get a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in education as well while they're here with us. And that's also free as well, including free housing. So when they're here, they're also pretty much we take care of everything to help them, because sadly there's a lack of people who understand how important Christian education is, and we really do want to help those people, find those people, and help train them. And so not only do we have the apprenticeship program, we also have other materials for like, what are you going to do if you want to run a school? You have to actually have the materials to do it, not just the idea. And so we are people not just about, you know, going around and talking about this idea. We also have an operations manual, which we have available for people. That's actually how to run a school. We also have a curriculum, which is not only about how to operate a school, but filling the day, all the activities and the teaching and the games, everything a person would need. And so we do all these things here. And as you said, Nicene Covenant Church is a Christian Reconstructionist church. We do have a very small congregation as far as the church itself is concerned, like on Sunday morning. But as far as our outreach is concerned, throughout all the schools, throughout the community, we really do have a mega church, really, because we have over 2,000 students a day that are going to be sitting in our schools learning Bible time every day. We do Bible time twice a day on top of all the education and other things that we do. So even though our typical congregation, as some people would think of it as, would be very small, but our outreach and our spiritual congregation, we really are a mega church and something that is truly to be, hopefully, somebody would take up that idea and try to mimic it as far as going out into the community and doing something.
What sort of input and feedback are you getting from the parents?
Whenever people are told that their job is to go out there and teach the nation, to disciple the nation, one of the things I think is very important for people to understand is that we have a calling to go out there and to do our jobs, to go out there and teach, to go out there and preach, to disciple, but we aren't responsible for the outcome. What happens with that? And so with Christian Reconstructionism, the idea is to get out there and to teach people God's law, the new foundation. You have a humanistic foundation where man can kind of create his own laws, he comes up with his own rules, or of course you're going to have the foundation of God's law, God's rules. And either you have a humanistic civilization or you have a Christian civilization. And either way, you're building one direction or the other. And sadly, all too often, the humanists are very, very good at being dedicated. They have no qualms about it. They are 100% dedicated to education. You can see this in all their efforts. Not only are they focused on the college level, Not only are they focused on the high school, middle school, elementary levels, but they've been pushing and pushing and pushing. If you listen and you read their philosophers and all the people in politics, they're trying to go all the way down to the cradle, all the way down to infancy. And they understand that it's important to teach people once they're in college level or adults. That's great. It is important to teach people who are in high school level, middle school level, and elementary level. But what the humanists are finding out, which apparently Christians have yet to learn this lesson, is that the majority of your foundations are being taught when you're a child. And whenever you're taught as a child, this is the foundation of your morality. This is how you see the world. This is going to shape how you're going to become a person, how you're going to become an adult, how you're going to see what is good, what is wrong, what is acceptable, what society should look like. And this involves all kinds of things, politics, family life, everything. And the humanists are very good at understanding this concept. And so whenever the Christians are looking at, well, what is it you're trying to do with these students? I think that Christians should sometimes take a step back, because the Bible is very clear that the non-Christians are wiser in their ways very often than the Christians are. So in other words, they're very self-conscious about what they're doing. And whenever they're focused on education, it's because they view this as being important to future. And Christians, they kind of want to build a big church. They kind of want to maybe get the tithe money in there. They want to teach adults because they feel like they want somebody to respect them for their intellect. But they don't really want to focus on the children because, after all, how much do children understand? And that's kind of where the focus is in the Christian community as a whole. But as parents, and obviously having 11 children myself, the parents' job is to get in there. And at the very beginning, from infancy, they start shaping their child's outlook for the future. These things are good for you to do. These things are not good for you to do. This is good for you to do in society. This is not good for you to do in society. And so when somebody asks me what is our goals, what is it we're trying to do, that's what we're trying to do. Lay the foundation, starting at the earliest of ages, to lay the foundation in their hearts that God is the one who's in charge. Because we do this all the time at Bible time at our school. Is we ask them about, there's two things that children have to learn. Number one, who is the authority figure? Either it's God or it's something else. It's some another person or it's themselves, most likely themselves. And then, of course, what are the rules? And so we try to establish those two concepts primarily, which will lead, of course, them to Christ and to a Christian civilization, is that God is in charge, not you, and God has a law. You can't do what you want. And I'd say that is our focus right there. And we can get into more about what changes we've seen in the families through this type of teaching. But that is kind of the focus of what Grace Community School does.
Puritans understood this. They said that it's far easier to the seal on the wax when it's still warm. Because of television and smartphones and the internet, children are really exposed to adult information at an ever early age. What's tragic is that Christians today, you know, even many adults are not familiar with the Shorter Catechism, which was actually compiled for children. Modern American Christianity is really engaging in a form of ageism, where they're discriminating against these covenant children by virtue of their young age. And it seems to me that Christ did not have that attitude towards the young children.
No, not remotely. And I would say quite often that when you're in this subject and you're working with preschool and young children, you always hear the kind of the catchphrase, forbid not the little ones to come to me and all the rest. And this is very important because education starts, and you hear it in the homeschool movement, they'll talk about Deuteronomy 6, where you're supposed to, as a parent, teach your children daily the commandments of God. It's not a one time on Sunday where you're teaching the commandments, but it's all the time, every day. And so whenever you're bringing in children into like a preschool setting, and they're around people who are constantly not only teaching them the commandments, like we stop twice a day and we actually sit down, have the children recite the commandments, we tell the Bible stories with application, but also, once again, we're throughout the day continuing to model this in front of them. They're getting to see what it means to be a Christian family. Like I said, my wife is there, my kids are there, and the majority of people in the community don't know what a Christian family looks like. In fact, they don't know what the creation model is. In fact, we see it today, the family is under attack. It's not just one husband and one wife. It's now two men, two women, or whatever. And so the problem is that when you deal with the general public, this is what you see is broken families everywhere. You have one mother who might have not only a child that might be illegitimate, but she might have three legitimate children. She has a new boyfriend every other day. So whenever you're talking about the commandments, they might go to church on Sunday, but when you're talking about what a family is, they don't even know what it looks like. They really don't. So whenever they're able to see what a Christian family looks like, the husband and wife, myself and my wife, working side by side every day, those kids actually do become part of our family. And so most often we'll see with the young children is they'll actually want to talk as if they are part of our family. They'll come in and give us hugs. They'll want to sometimes go home with us. They feel like our children are part of their family too, like an extension. And they are. And you have to view children as part of your spiritual family. And the children kind of get that whenever you're teaching them. And I think it's very important that people kind of get the idea off that whenever you're trying to minister to people, it's not this kind of apologetics approach where you're trying to come in and try to destroy what somebody believes. And don't get me wrong, there is a time and place for that kind of stuff to go in there and counteract false beliefs and all the rest. But with children, you're able to get there first. Like you were talking about, laying the foundation. Instead of going around and trying to work at the top level with college kids or adults are concerned, and don't get me wrong, the people do need to do that. But they also are neglecting the bottom level, completely neglecting the bottom level. And this is where Christians can come in and lay that foundation for morality, for authority. And so I think that this is something that Christians need to focus on, and that's something we continue to pound the drum on because they don't focus on it. They don't see the need to do it. And I think, sadly, it's not about the children. It's not about really discipling people. It's almost like an ego trip for people. They get out there and they can say, well, I went out there and I was smarter than this other person, or I was able to take all of his arguments and just destroy his arguments. And it's almost like an ego trip. But once again, teaching and discipling is not about an ego trip. It's not being made to feel good. It's not about destroying somebody's arguments. It's about teaching and preaching the truth. Now, some people are going to listen to you, and you can go through the book of Acts and the early church, and this was the case. Some people listened. You know, if they had ears to hear, they would listen and they would follow. The true sheep, they have the ears to hear and they will follow the truth. Others will not. And so I think we have to get outside this mindset that we're going to create Christians. You know, our job is to go out there and call, and the true Christians will hear and the non-Christians will not. And whenever you deal with education, that's what it's all about, laying this foundation and also creating what Rush Street likes to call a Christian civilization, reestablishing what the laws should be in the world. And so that's what Christian education does, and that's one of the things we try to do at our schools as well, is present that foundation in the proper light.
Do the parents that come to bring their children to Grace Community Schools, are a large percentage of them unchurched? Are most of them Christians? What are their perceptions of what their children are going to be exposed to? And what sort of feedback do you get routinely from the parents?
Yeah, it's actually a beautiful thing, really. And people don't take this into account. They think that for some reason a person has to be a professing Christian or a church-going person in order for them to bring their children to a Christian school. In other words, whenever a person comes to our school, they know we're going to teach them God's commandments. They know we're going to sit there and teach them God's authority, the authority of the Bible, and, of course, morality. But it doesn't mean that that person themselves might do those things or may not be a Christian themselves. But one thing the Christians have going for them, which I think most people miss, is that the law is written on their heart. So whenever you're talking to a child and you are teaching the commandments, you're not really teaching them anything new. You're just trying to bring it to the level of self-consciousness, just trying to reiterate it again and again and again. So the Christians have that going for them, where the non-Christians don't. The non-Christians are having to suppress the knowledge of God. And it takes them years. We talked about this concept. My wife and I were doing a podcast recently on the subject of abortion. And we're talking about how our children, when they came to the knowledge of abortion, that somebody could kill their kid, they were horrified. And they were only like 3 or 4 years old when they learned the concept of abortion, that people could actually kill their kids legally. And whenever we explained it to them, they were absolutely horrified. But you get a person who is now 18, 19, 20 years old, they've been in secular education. They've been taught for the last 15, 16, 18 years that this is a good thing. Now you're dealing with somebody who for years and years and years has had that law of God stamped down, stamped down, stamped down. And now you come in as a person who might be against abortion, obviously as a Christian, and you're trying to convince them that for the last 18 years, they've been taught wrong by every single person, every single teacher, every single person they've ever learned from, including maybe their parents, and you're trying now to undo 18 years of suppressed consciousness. And it's a very difficult thing to do. But with Christians, when you're dealing with young children, you're just fostering what's already there. Now, as far as the parents are concerned, they also have the law of God written on their hearts. Now, they may not obey the commandments. We're talking about, you know, men and women who are, you know, go from one person to the next in different sexual relationships and all the rest. But I've heard this before when they come in and they'll look at us and they know we're Christians. They'll even listen to our Bible times. We're teaching the commandments. They know what we're doing. And they've actually said to me many times, 17 years of experience in this field, and they'll say, I want something better for my children. So in other words, even though they themselves may not repent, they may not stop what they're doing, they know it. They already know that they're doing wrong. I mean, I don't have to get a hammer and beat them in the head with it. They know what they're doing is wrong already. They're bringing their children to a Christian school that is teaching against what they're doing, whatever it might be, not just sexual sins, but all the rest that go with it. And so it's not that they don't know, and that's one of the things that I think people mistake, that somehow sin is an intellectual problem. It's not. It's a spiritual problem. And they know what they're doing is wrong. But here's the interesting thing. They will bring their children to a Christian school because they know how their life has turned out. They know that their life is full of pain. Their life is full of misery, even though they still cling to it. They won't let go of it. But they know that all of their life choices against the commandments have led them to misery. And we get to see it on a daily basis, the misery of their lives. You really have to have a heart for them because they really are trapped in this cycle of sin, which they can't seem to break themselves out of. And I would also venture to say, don't want to, in a lot of ways, break out of. But they want to have their children have this better life. And so they know that even instinctually, as we're talking about, the law on the heart, they want to bring their children to somebody who will teach their children a better way. This is true, and they know it is. And so they will, even though they may not themselves repent, they may not themselves remove themselves from those things, those sins, but they do want the children not to repeat their circumstances and have the terrible life that they've had. And so they do bring their children to Christians like us. And also through the efforts we have, the children will go home and say, well, why is it you're doing this? You're supposed to be married, Mommy. Why aren't you married? And we've had, because the testimony of the children are bringing the commandments home to their families, we've had it convict the parents. And then, of course, because I'm a minister myself, I've actually had many parents approach me and say, you know, Reverend Jeremy, would you like to marry my boyfriend and I because we want to get married? And because this is a testimony the children have brought to their parents, and they have to look in the eye of their own child. Their child knows the commandments. They know the commandments. And their child is saying, you are not obeying those commandments, and you should be. And then they will feel convicted by that. And then they will, like I said, I've performed many, many marriages, either myself or the other guys who work in the various schools over the years, lots and lots of them. And not just that, other things too. Like one guy was stealing from his company. He was stealing. And the child had found out that the father had taken something from work, and he said, Daddy, thou shalt not steal. You're not allowed to take something. And he actually came in and shared the story because, of course, he was a thief. And so his child, however, convicted him of his sin. And he actually did stop stealing. Now, the lasting effects of that, of course, that's all in God's hand. But we're doing what we can to take the Word of God, instill that into the children's hearts, and they actually become evangelists themselves in their own lives. And so I would say that's the kind of changes we're going to see and we have seen over the years. And I would almost call it a societal sanctification to a certain extent, where you have, you know, less murders, less deaths, and all the rest of it, less children outside of wedlock, less abortions, all the rest. And so this slow movement towards Christian civilization is what Christian education does.
Jeremy, your program is intended to go up to late adolescence, about 12 years old, is my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. What is the educational track that those children generally take after having been through your program at Grace Community? Or most of them go on to public school, homeschool, or other Christian schools that take them on into their junior high and high school?
There's a large variety of different directions the parents will take them in. and for various reasons, however they go. Now, I do think that Christians need to have a from bottom to top approach in education. We need to have solutions, and we just don't. There's no push for it. There's no movement towards it. And I think that, frankly speaking, they just don't see the need for it, and so they don't do it. We need to have, however, just like the humanists, I mean, once again, I go back to the fact that the non-Christians are much wiser in their ways than we are. They have created structure that goes from the top all the way down to the bottom, and they're very much involved in preschool. Right now in our town, I'd say 98%, if not 99% of all preschools in this entire South of Florida are all 100% humanist education facilities. There is no God's law taught. It's all humanism 101. In other words, it's
right.
The values are whatever you want them to be. And so they are very intelligent about starting from the ground and going all the way to the top. And so I definitely think Christians need to mimic this concept, because we see the results. We see people always ask the question, well, how did America start going down the tube so quickly? Well, it's not very difficult. You take the entire generation, and don't get me wrong, I mean, I think it's been used so many times, it's almost ridiculous to keep using the term, but Hitler had used the term. He says, well, you say you won't come to my side. Well, what are you? Your children already belong to me. You'll be gone soon, and they will be the next generation. And so the evil people in the world do understand this concept, that they're going to grab the kids, they're going to teach them when they're young, and then they will, in the future, control what happens down the road. And we see what's happened. America has slowly, I like to use the term, been desanctified. It's been destroying Christianity over the last 100 years. And they have a systematic effort in doing that. And so as far as we start at the preschool level, because we understand that the children of today are going to be the adults of tomorrow. And so we've decided to put our focus where it's needed the most at the moment. Now, of course, I do think that other Christians need to get into the fight and help us by also starting to make solutions for the upper grades as well, from infancy all the way up, Christian education all the way through high school, college level, and all the rest. But that, of course, is going to take some time and some dedicated people, which is part of what our apprenticeship program is about, trying to get people involved in this this fight we're in. And so people do leave our schools and go on to various things. But we do, of course, we get in there to establish God's law in the hearts and minds of these kids, and we can have them for 12 years. So I'm getting 12 years of time on a daily basis, 5 days a week, 2 times a day, to continue to teach and catechize and to make application to their lives so they understand. Not only can they recite the commandments, but you were mentioning earlier catechisms, and I believe catechisms are fantastic. But if you just have the kids like take the Ten Commandments and recite them on a daily basis, but they didn't know how to actually make application, how does this actually apply to me? Then we don't do anything really except give them a memory verse. And so our job is also knowing to have them recite things like catechisms and Ten Commandments, but also help them understand it through application. And that's what we do in our Bible time. And but they do go on to various things, but we have 12 years of building this foundation. And so even if they do go on to other humanistic institutions, they're going to have to, now the humanists we're talking about here, are going to have to contend with 12 years of Christian education and try to unravel what I've built up in these kids for 12 years. And that's going to be one heck of a job for them, because we've already got the law of God on their hearts already. We've just fostered that. We didn't put it there. God did that. And all we did was continue to foster that and also to show that by example, having a godly family in front of them on a daily basis, showing them what it means to be a Christian family as far as how you treat each other, what the children are supposed to do, the responsibilities in the community. And once again, no matter where they go, whatever institutions they might go into, these people now are going to have one heck of a job trying to unravel what we've built for 12 years.
Are you also teaching other components of Christian Reconstructionist worldview or Faith Law of Life worldview? Do you actually go into things like the doctrines of grace or post-millennialism, or is it primarily the law?
Well, I think that people misunderstand what Christian Reconstructionism is. I think they miss what post-mill is. I think they missed a lot of things, because once again, we're dealing with a lot of big words, a lot of big topics, and people fail to think that one thing leads to the next. And so whenever you start at the bottom, you start teaching the law of God, Whenever you teach the law of God, you're teaching them what their lives are supposed to look like, right? And then whenever the children hold themselves up to that law, they then realize that they don't match up to this. I'm not honoring my father and mother as I should. I am lying. I do like to steal. They realize that they are placing themselves in the place of God. They don't really like to listen to anybody. They don't really like to listen to God. They really do, like Adam and Eve, want to be little gods that can decide good and evil for themselves. And whenever this happens, they are then faced with a choice at this point to say, I don't measure up to this, and I need a Savior. Now, once that takes place, because it all drives a person to Christ, and then once they have gone to Christ, Christ will then point them back to the law and says, now, here's how you're supposed to live. And a lot of people take the law of God and toss it out. And the Southern Baptists did this when I was growing up, is all they preached was Christ, pray the prayer, all this stuff. But they never had the law. And so whenever a person was converted, now, what are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to live? How is a man supposed to orchestrate his family? How is a man supposed to orchestrate his business? How is a man supposed to teach if he has a school? And so what happens is, I say one thing flows into the next, because as we teach that the law of God is going to bring families together, the law of God is going to take the businessman, kind of like Zacchaeus, he was a very evil tax collector at one point, and then he has the meeting with Christ, and he says, all the people that I stole from, I pay back fourfold. So you had a tax collector who now is not only going to stop stealing, he's now going to return all the money that he stole from people. In other words, this concept of post-mill, that things are going to get progressively better, is a natural outworking of salvation. It's really not a concept that is a theological new concept. It's something that naturally takes place. When people start to keep the commandments, you have a progressive sanctification of the man, the progressive sanctification of the family, a progressive sanctification of the community, and, of course, a progressive sanctification of a nation.
So far, have you primarily been able to stay under the radar, or have you actually caught the attention of authorities within the state education community or civil government, or have you actually come under fire and criticism, or have you been able to pretty much do what you're doing without fighting a rear guard action at the same time?
No, I definitely think that Christians, if they are going to enter into the community, if they're going to do anything other than stay in their homes, then they are going to encounter lots of opposition, especially when, once again, as we're talking here, you have a bunch of humanist educators who are trying to grasp all the children for themselves, to educate them for their future with their laws. And whenever you step in and say, no, we're also going to get into this now, and we're going to teach these children that, no, you're incorrect. God's law is the standard. You're going to get opposition, and quite a bit of it. The Grace Community Schools, over the last 30 years, has had lots and lots of opposition from these state agencies. One of the most noted ones was, because, of course, all schools are inspected by the state. You can't get away from that kind of stuff. It is just a part of the world. But we do have a lot of religious freedoms in America, thankfully, still today, so they can't stop you from being Christian schools. But we have had state, I've sat down with quite a few inspectors and things like that, and I've had them look at me straight in the face and say that the Bible was inappropriate to teach to children. Now, flat out, I mean, they make no qualms about it. They don't even hide what their beliefs are. They've actually sat down and said the Bible is inappropriate for children. Basically, that you're going to give children a miseducation by teaching them that they're not supposed to lie, that they're not supposed to steal. They, once again, as we talked about, they understand whenever you bring in a different authority, it's not the state, it's God. Whenever you bring in a different law, it's not humanism's law, it is God's law. They view it as an attack on themselves. And if you're going to be in this kind of field, then you cannot be a person who is afraid. I like to use Gideon's army as a good example of this concept, because first off, Gideon's army was not very big. It's a very small type of organization at the end. But right before they go into the fight there with Gideon, one of the ones was if any of the men were fearful, if they were afraid to go into battle, God didn't want them. And I would also say that's also true of Christian education or any Christian ministry at all. If you're a person who is afraid of conflict, if you're afraid of getting into issues where you're going to have to be worried about your own personal issues, sometimes like in case of certain people, they might have a potentiality of going to jail or having to have conflicts with people. If you're a person who is lighthearted and fearful, then I don't think you're fit for Christian education. You have to be a person who knows what you're doing. They are convicted and have this personal belief that what they're doing is right, and they're going to go in there because they're a soldier. And I don't think you can be fearful. Like I would say, right now we're teaching in Bible time at school the life of Paul. And Paul was given the calling to go out there and to teach and to, of course, be one of the first missionaries who went around. But he continued to get stoned. I mean, he was a guy who knew there was opposition. He knew there was going to be problems, but he didn't care. He knew that this was God's will, and it wasn't going to be easy. And I think that is part of what it means to be in Christian education. You have this massive war going on, and you have to be a person who is willing to get into the fight.
How large a staff do you have? I mean, with your 9 different campuses, how many people are part of your ministry / school? Do some of these young people who feel called to Christian education, like yourself, do they end up finding their future spouse there through your program? I'm curious.
Well, that's actually 2 very good points there. The concept that how many staff we have, it varies as far as how big the school is. Like myself, I have over 30 staff members who work with me at my school on the day-to-day operations of it all. And so we have quite a large staff. And we have 9 locations. So out of all the schools, I don't know, I have the number at the top of my head, probably over 200 staff around there. And all these people work with us to operate the schools on a daily basis. And as far as the people who are going to find their spouses, that is something that I think people need to think about, which they don't ever talk about. And my wife and I have been trying to bring awareness to the concept of a family calling. In other words, a man, even in the Bible, when Adam was created, Eve was created as his helpmeet, to help him in his calling, in his job. And the normal concept is that you have the husband who has a job and the wife who has a job, and they don't really work together. In other words, if he is, a plumber, she doesn't help him with a plumbing business. And my wife actually and I just did a podcast on that recently discussing this issue. But definitely, I mean, we would not only advocate the teaching of people, finding people like myself who are interested in Christian education and running schools, but also a person that was interested in that to look for a spouse also that has a similar calling to themselves. And so, yes, I would definitely say that that is something we promote through our apprenticeship program, is finding people who have this collective calling. And we like to use the term family-run Christian school because this is the best model for what it means to show the world what it means to be a Christian family, because not only do we minister to the kids, we don't have time to go through all the stories of how many families we've reached and touched because of they know we're a godly Christian family. And even though the rest of their friends and their family are all messed up and sinful, they know these people, these Christian educators that run this preschool, these people here are godly. They're always going to have my best interest at heart and my children. And so we've actually had many people who've actually been somewhat part of our family as well because of that. Because we're talking here, Bill, about the difference between, like we take the apologetic approach, where a person goes onto a college campus and they're going to talk to a person for maybe 30 minutes or whatever, and they'll probably never see this person again, right? Versus these people come into my school, and I will be part of their lives for the next 10 to 12 years. And so they get to see Christianity modeled in front of them. It's not just that Jeremy and Abby call themselves Christians. It's that they get to see a Christian family in action over the period of over a decade. And so this makes an impact not just in the child, it also makes an impact in each and every single one of the parents. And so that's something that's why I say, like you were talking about, finding a spouse that is part of that calling, I think is very important.
With all the staff that you have, Jeremy, what sort of examination or doctrinal statement do you expect them to sign enable you to determine that they have an operational, biblical faith for all of life, that they're the real deal?
Well, it's a very good question, and I think that, once again, we'll go back to the concept of how is it that non-Christians approach education? How is it that they approach hiring their staff? How is it that they approach the actual day-to-day operations of a school? Take a public school, for instance. Public schools are absolutely full of professing Christians. That's just a fact. It's absolutely 100% fact. Now, the question is, these professing Christians that are in the public school institutions, have they impacted the results of what's coming out, the product of what's coming out of the public schools in America today? And the answer is 100%, they have not impacted it at all. Now, the question is why is it if you have professing Christians, and some of them, once again, I'm not denying anybody's professions of faith, nor their commitment to their churches, nor their commitment to Christ. But why is it then that they are ineffectual in making any impact whatsoever in the outcome of the product that's coming out of public schools today?
Well, of course, they're hamstrung by the system.
Very good. That's exactly right. That's the answer. See, the humanists have no problem bringing in professing Christians as long as they, guess what, keep their Christianity to themselves while they're there. And
right.
As long as they do not teach it, and if they attempt to do so, they will be fired if they attempt to do so. So in other words, you have a management, you have a supervisory board, Department of Education, then they have rules. And so they don't really necessarily come in and examine you and say, are you a humanist? All they say is, while you're here, you're going to be supporting humanism while you're here. And if you attempt to subvert humanism in the public schools, you will be expelled from the school immediately. And because of this, they have, like you said, sidelined and hamstrung Christians to where it doesn't matter what their personal professions of faith are, they're actually not doing anything to make any impact whatsoever with the overall goals of the school, and the humanists are very, very successful at what they do.
What I'm getting at, though, is that your program does not attract your garden variety pietistic evangelical, but it occurred to me that your staff may comprise one of the largest concentration of Reconstructionists anywhere in the continental United States.
Well, I would say this is that the main supervisors, directors, all the people that would be kind of directing the schools themselves are most certainly 100% dedicated Reconstructionists, pointed in the right direction. However, you're going to have other people who come into your school who may not hold all those views. You might have Arminians, you might have lots of different viewpoints that are coming through. And like you said, if we're trying to create an entire staff of 30 Christian Reconstructionists, this is going to be almost impossible because we're such a small group, sadly. But what does take place is this, is that while people are there and they are professing Christians, while they're there, they are going to help and support the overall goals of the school. Over the last 30 years, we've been very, very successful in our goals in teaching God's law, teaching the principles of Christian Reconstructionism to the students. And we've been very, very good at this. But once again, I always come back to, because some people have the wrong views on that every single person that's within the operation has to have all the exact same views. And I've talked to a lot of apprentices that come through, and we don't restrict ourselves just to people who are absolutely 100% Christian Reconstructionists while they're here with us, while they're training. We will be training them to be Christian Reconstructionists. That's most certain.
As Paul Michael Raymond from New Geneva Leadership Academy in Appomattox likes to say, everybody is a Reconstructionist, at least to the extent that they want to change something. So when I use the term Reconstruction, your staff being a concentration of Reconstructionists, I'm thinking in terms of small r, in the sense that these are people that are at the very least utilizing and complying with your operational strategy of teaching the law of God with a view to applying it. And that right there puts them ahead of the vast evangelical population.
I would agree entirely with you. And I would venture to say in that context that we're talking here that out of the entire Christian Reconstruction movement that I'm aware of, and I've been involved in it for 17 years now, I would say that if you were going to have a Christian Reconstructionist megachurch, it's Grace Community School. That is us.
Ask you one other thing before we let you go here, and we appreciate you meeting us on short notice. I'm looking forward to my next trip down to Southwest Florida. I'd love to visit your facility and see your program firsthand. That is, I know you mentioned that you just hosted. You host a biannual or twice yearly convention. And, of course, Christians love conventions. You know, there's an End Abortion Now group in Phoenix right now, and we have one, and Paul Michael Raymond just had one recently about rebuilding the Coliseum up in Appomattox regarding homeschooling. They had Scott Buss and E. Ray Moore up there, as well as others. The Future of Christendom Conference coming up in Reading, Pennsylvania, July, with Gary North and Bojidar Marinoff and Tim Yarborough and Coach Roy Hansen and Matt Trahella and Martin Sobrady, many others. Tell us what your conferences deal with, and what's the next step? How do we get beyond simply attending conferences?
Well, I do think that conferences have their place to kind of prompt people into action. And I would almost view that in some ways like you would attend Sunday morning church services and things like that. It's kind of a call to arms, a get into action, get inspired, go out there and get to work. And so I think that conferences do have their place, and we have been doing one. We've done it twice now. We just got them started. And we tend to continue on about every 6 months just to continue banging the drum and making aware, specifically for us, Christian education is what our focus is. And it's very much more of a recruiting tool. And so we're not going out there so we can inspire somebody. We can have great speakers who are just going to come out, and you're going to feel good about coming out and listening to this person. We want people who are going to actually catch a vision for Christian education and then commit themselves to it. We don't want people who are just going to go and learn something so they can go talk on Facebook about it. We want somebody actually to pick up the tools and get to work. And that's what ours are all about. We've also not only started the conferences within the last year, we've started three different podcasts, or also type of recruiting tools as well. We have the Preschool Pioneers podcast, which is on the Christian Reconstructionist Network. That one focuses on various aspects of rebuilding the family, teaching people how to be a teacher and a manager of school, and also how to advertise a Christian school. So it's very practical things within that podcast. We have one that's called Moral Foundations podcast, also on the network as well, which teaches people how to actually teach the Bible. So if they're at home or if they are in a Christian school setting, they can actually learn how to teach it. Sadly, most people have no idea how to systematically teach the Bible. And we also started a new one called The Easy Chair in Practice, basically going through all of Restuni's books, articles, videos, and other things he's done, and talking about how to actually put these things into practice. That's also on the network. And we have a fourth one that's going to come out, I think, in about a week, which is actually redoing all of his Easy Chair tapes and just re-airing them as they used to be back in the 80s and the 90s. And because reintroducing this next generation that call themselves Christian Reconstructionists, reintroducing them to what Rush Dooney had taught back in the 80s and 90s, because a lot of people call themselves Christian Reconstructionists, I think, have a limited knowledge of what that means or the scope. And so that's also going to be on the network as well. So if somebody is like listening to one of your shows here, the War Room, they can also look for those on there as well. And the conference goes with that. All of those are tools in order to seek out people to get to work. Once again, I don't think there's anything wrong with conferences, but the problem I have with conferences in general is that people talk about going to them like they're going to a rock concert to meet their favorite rock star. It's an experience for them to a certain extent. But it's not about actually, after I leave here, I'm going to actually get to work. I'm going to commit myself to Christian work. And that's something that we push with our organization, and what our events are, the six-month events, are just about that. They're recruiting events, trying to find people that want to actually get to work and do something. Let's stop talking and let's start working. And if I had to say all the podcast efforts that we're doing and the events, that's what it is. We want people to stop talking and start making a difference.
Well, I'm glad. It's a good thing for Reconstructionist Radio that you came upon us and that you have added your considerable horsepower, energy, and focus, enthusiasm and background to our humble efforts. This has been a work of the Holy Spirit, to be sure. And, you know, a true confession moment here. I started out in my discussion with Jeremy off the air about the fact that I hadn't really paid a great deal of attention to the homeschooling and the Christian education podcast because, you know, I'm a 62-year-old single man. My children are grown. I have two grandchildren. But aside from seeking to influence my children, I hadn't really taken Christian education to be really very close to my heart, really. And I say that to my shame. You know, now there are, obviously there are a lot of issues that need focus and energy, you know, ending, you know, the abolishing child sacrifice, reclaiming the narrative as it pertains to civil government, the law of God, and the family and marriage and all these things. But I think Jeremy's so right that the key to multi-generational Christianity, which is what we have to be talking about, if we're talking about building the kingdom, then obviously that starts with the next generation. And so it occurred to me that perhaps there are grandparents and elderly people or older people, seasoned citizens, not yet ready for the pasture, but who don't think they have any skin in the game, that they could play an important role in Christian in reconstructing society by getting involved in Christian education efforts such as what Jeremy and Abby have there at Grace Community School.
And I would like to interject here as well. You talk about the importance of Christian education as well and how it impacts everything. And I think that the End Abortion Now movements and all the rest are doing a wonderful work, very important stuff to try to get these things out of our culture. And I was talking in our event just this last weekend, and I was talking about the concept of abortion, and I said that the problem with abortion isn't that it's legal. The problem with abortion is that people are asking for it. And Christian education gets to the root of this problem where it says that thou shalt not kill. And once again, you work from the bottom up and stealing this concept into them, and you change the culture. Because right now, you can go to any high school in America right now, and you're going to get a 90 or 98% positive view of abortion because they've done a wonderful job in teaching that it's okay. And this is the impact that Christian education does. It influences everything that's out there. So if anybody is interested, I know we're wrapping up here, for about our programs, you can go to our website, which is gcsapprenticeship.com as our main website. And, of course, definitely look on the Christian Reconstructionist Network that people are on. And if there's anything on there, there's lots of great programs on there. They can also find ours. And more information, they can always contact us through our website as well.
Jeremy Walker, Grace Community Schools, we thank you for joining us. And, folks, we thank you for tuning in to us here today on The War Room.
Thank you for joining us in The War Room. Please enjoy The Nation's Rage, Psalm 2, by My Soul Among Lions.
Why do the nations rage? Why do the people?